Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to Strength to Be Human. This is the interview part of the show. I was excited to have interview guests. We actually welcome back for a second time previous guests from our show with Kathy Gogan and Matt Reifenberg. This time, they are working on a novel, and the novel will include a big part of what the play they did, Unstoppable by Design, but also possibly some other stories of Matt's life as well. And they're going to share some of that on the show here. So Kathy and Matt, thank you very much for coming on again.
Thank you for having us, Mark.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer and definitely a big winner for me, because when you guys came on last time, it was like the most well-received show we've ever had in the history of the show. You know, I don't want to overstate it, because, you know, we're only 6 months old, and when you were on the show, we were only about 6 or 7 weeks old. But still, it was wonderful to have that, because it really shows that the unique things that you're doing and the general and genuine nature of it all, you know, really, really responds to people. And I'm always excited to see and hear that.
Yeah, it was great great doing it the first time, and we're happy to be back to share what we've been up to.
Well, that's great. It was a unique experience last time, and I still feel that in many ways this is going to be a unique experience this time, because even though we might be talking about that play again, we're also going to talk about what you're trying to do on creating a novel, and maybe some of the other stories that we haven't heard before. You can share some of those as well, and of course, the rest of them people can pick up when the book comes out. But this is going to be another exciting episode because of that, and I thank you. So, Kathy, how are you going about this? What's been your whole plan on this novel?
Well, at first I really didn't have a plan. We finished the play, of course, and we have gotten to see the reading of the play and the first performance of the play. So at that point, we discussed, I guess we had always thought that there would be something after, and we just weren't sure what direction we were going to go. So we discussed the option to expand the play from one act to a full length, and then we discussed the option of the novel. And after, you know, weighing the pros and cons of each, we felt that the novel would be the next logical step for us, because we were pretty pleased with leaving the play as a one act in the way that it was. So this just seemed like a logical next step. And so that was really the first part of the process, was just deciding, you know, that is the direction that we want to take and change genres.
I got you. How are you going to be putting in different stories in a novel? Because, you know, normally a novel is usually about a set of characters and a certain theme that goes from the beginning to the end. Are you trying to do something a bit different?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be unique in that aspect, I think. It won't be your typical character-driven story. And the order won't necessarily be chronological or anything like you might expect. So there's no set structure like that. But what we're trying to do, I mean, it does sort of have a theme. And we start with the story of how we met. And that really introduces the novel. And I guess we've discovered that how we met is just as fascinating, or at least as much a part of the overall story, you know, as the individual stories that we're going to outline. And another unique aspect will be that after each of the chapters, which will be primarily about people that have influenced Matt in one way or another, but sometimes experiences as well. But at the end of each, he's writing, so he'll actually be doing the writing of lessons learned and thoughts that he has about, you know, that particular chapter. So that's going to really, I think, make it a unique product and an interesting one.
Yeah, that, no doubt. I haven't really heard too many other people do something like that. Sometimes you have books out there that they'll call themselves something and it has a string of themes. And basically, it's really a collection of novellas where they can explore different things, but it has a similar theme. You don't see as many of those anymore, but, you know, they've been done that way. And then others are this collection of stories. So you're going to be definitely going in a completely different angle, which is great because I'm all about seeing things that are being done creative and new and that can still reach people. So it's always exciting to be a part of this. I feel like I'm like, you know, part of the, you know, the creators of it all just because I'm hearing it, you know, for one of the first times and helping promote it out there. So thank you very much for being part of that.
Thank you for doing that for us. And you were our first podcast, the first time we ever spoke openly about the play. So we'll always be grateful for that, Mark, and that opportunity.
Oh, it's exciting. That's what this is supposed to all be about, is to let creative people out there have some voice and some exposure out there on the things they're doing, you know, with the hopes that they'll continue on to do interesting things. And like you've done interviews and other things like that. So that's really what you're hoping to do, is just to spark that and get people going. And that was always my my reason behind the whole thing, believing that could work. And I'm very glad to see that's exactly what's working with you and for others as well.
Yeah, and you know, we've like, even like we're working on the second project, we already have ideas for the third project. So we're pretty much progressive thinkers, I think, and probably we'll be working together for quite some time.
Well, that's great. There's nothing wrong with carrying on with different stories. And to be honest with you, it's difficult in my book and in my experience to work with another person many a times. No offense, Matt. It's not that typical. I mean, I've done some group things and team things and things before, and you find many a times that they don't often have the same intensity as you do, or the same degree of reliability, or the same degree of just consistency. And that makes it things drag on longer, and sometimes it can become a frustrating thing that you don't really feel that the best came out of it. So when you have these partnerships, as you might want to call them, the creative ones, especially in writing, which is not so easy at all to do, you know, you want to encourage that, and you want to praise that, and you want to point it out, because it's simply not that common. And I confess, I failed at it in the past, and I'm better off just by myself. That's just the truth.
Well, Kat's pretty easy to work with, and you know, she takes a lot of my ideas and edits on the things that she writes pretty well. There's always, you know, some things that she wishes I would let her leave in, but I just don't, you know, I want them taken out. So we, you know, we discuss it, and usually I get my way, and then we move on.
That's really the secret of it, Mark, is that I'm very flexible and agreeable, and you know, he's exasperating to work with at times, but it's okay, because you know, I'm pretty nice overall, and the product is not going to suffer if I don't get my way all the time. So you know, it's going to be his stories mostly. I mean, I'm involved a little bit more this time in the way we met, at least I have a part. But you know, overall, I'm just, again, sort of the storyteller, but the truth of the stories, they still belong to him. So we just really don't have many conflicts like that, because I think we both just want what's best for the project.
And that's great. And maybe I'm on a limb here, but from talking to Matt in the past and knowing some of the things that went on over here, he's not really a formal writer or has that traditional writing background. So, you know, at least you don't have two writers that have these things clashing, because that's where it becomes to be difficult. In many ways, he's probably more of the editor of the project in some instances than the second writer.
I think it works both ways. Like I edit what she writes, and she will edit what I write. You know, for flow and realism, and sometimes grammatical errors. You know,
those are very few, by the way.
I think we work pretty well together, and, you know, we can feed off of each other and, you know, just do the best we can with the information that we have and revise things as we go. And, you know, it's working out well. So. Well,
that is great, and God bless you guys, because, like I said, it's not that common. A lot of people will tell you that if you talk to them, especially behind the scenes, they might not want to publicly say that, but it's not an easy thing. So whenever you see it, and just, you know, praise it and definitely move on. So I don't know what the percentage of the book is, and you can tell me that, but obviously there's going to be elements of the play that's going to be in the novel besides other stories, right?
There might be a couple of them, of the people from this story or the situation from the play that will be in the novel, but by and large, these are the stories that you didn't see in the play. You might have met, you know, one of the characters briefly, but this maybe will be a whole different story than you encountered in the play. So it's really going to be quite different.
Okay. And that's great. Were you planning on giving it a different title, or are you going to still stick with the title of the play and just put it onto the novel?
It's going to be the same.
Okay.
We both like that one a lot. And just for continuity, we're going to keep it. Maybe the next book will change it to something else.
I got you. Yeah, I like it a lot. I really do. I think it's a pretty unique one. It's got a real pizzazz to it. It has some power. It's a little bit of everything. So, yeah, why not use it again if you can, rather than just letting it stay with that one project. If you can use it again, why not? I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with it. And I even have a website that's called The Unstoppable Designer. It hasn't gone live yet, but I'm working on it slowly but surely, and that'll contain a lot of the information about some of the projects that I've worked on and things that I find interesting along the way, and, you know, just a place for me to, like, put my thoughts down and share.
That's so good. If you when you're done with that, and if you have, like, some additional links or a page or something, then you could probably take the two links that we'll have for these two interviews and make sure you include it in there. This way, when people stop by, it's something they can tap right away and go to and listen to.
Sure.
You know, that'd be a good idea for everybody involved, you know?
Yep. Right now we have them on Kat's website. So, you know, we'll continue to use that until mine goes live, and then we'll probably put them on both. So
that's great, and that'll definitely be helpful for everybody involved. So I definitely appreciate that. We all need that cross promotion thing, trust me.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, are you going to be looking for the traditional publisher for this, or are you planning on just doing your own in-house thing?
We've had several discussions about this, so we don't have a definite answer at this point. We're probably 5 to 6 months away from completion, so because this is going to take a bit longer than the play to write.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we're looking for the beginning of 2020 to. So we'll know, in the next month or so what direction that we we plan to take as far as the publishing.
Okay.
What do you think, Mark?
Well, it really depends on what your actual goals are going to be. You know, if you have a more of a commercial goal, you know, self-publishing or something of a smaller press nature might not be the best thing. If you feel that it has, you know, that kind of audience or that kind of potential, then you want to look for something bigger.
Right.
But when you do that, then you're looking at things that could be very delayed. I mean, right now, you know, I know a few people in that industry well. I mean, they're talking the average of two and a half years between them saying yes and between you actually seeing the book out.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's them saying yes. You know, and,
right.
And then you also have the additional issues of the 21st century where writers can't be just writers anymore. You got to have many hats, the agent hat, the representation hat, the marketing hat. A lot of times they want to know, how are you going to market this book before we even begin to read the book? And they want to know if your plan makes sense. Do you have a site? You know what I mean? Do you have people that are going to help promote it? Do you already have an audience? All these other things. And you have to have those kind of answers. And then if you sign and they're willing to do this for you, I mean, you could be literally promoting the book for the next year because they're going to want you doing everything possible to promote the book, which in itself is its own job.
Right.
You know, if you're a writer like I am or Kathy is, putting together all the stuff aside that you've been doing just to work on this one project for a year, it's, you know, it's almost like an indentured servitude. But that's the way the world is now, unfortunately. There's really no way to get around that.
Right, yeah.
Even if you're a celebrity, they literally say, yeah, you want an advance and just because you can get us on TV, we don't care. You're going to be at these 16 different events, and that's going to be it. Or you're not getting a contract. So, yeah, they could boss around just about everybody because all the cards are in their hands.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of what I was, you know, I'm on the fence about what we should do with it as far as, like, you know, going with a publisher versus self-publishing and, a lot of it is going to be time. I'm sorry, trying to think of the word. it's going to be based on what we both have going on because, you know, I work full time and Kathy's busy with her stuff. And, you know, like we just have a lot going on. So I'm not sure how it's all going to play out, but hopefully it'll be successful and, you know, can sit there and let those royalty checks come in.
And there's, you know, there's potential changes for both of us as well within this time frame. So I think it's really hard to determine at this point what direction is going to be the best or the one that would be feasible even for us to do. So, but, you know, we should know that fairly soon. I mean, within months. And I think we'll make a good choice either way. I like promotion. I think it's like equally fun to writing. But, you know, you do have to have the time and, you know, a lot of things will have to fall into place in order for that to happen. So we just have to see if that's the direction that it goes.
I understand. Well, you guys always have a line to me if you need any advice or have any questions or anything, because I've dealt in all the worlds of that so far already and more. So, you know, you might not always get the answers you want to hear, but at least it'll be the truth. But whatever you do, unfortunately, whatever decision you make, it's gonna be a commitment that you'll have to keep, and that's something you have to evaluate. With your schedules and in your life, and maybe even the goals. Maybe you have to adjust them based on this or based on that. But that's normally what I advise writers. They can, I don't like to use the word realistic because, quite frankly, everybody has a different schedule and maybe even a different goal. So something that's realistic for one person might not be for another. So there's not really any just general realistic. But yeah. you have to adjust it for that. You know, I've known some writers that they've taken less exposure because they just don't want to commit to all of that. They'd rather just do some other projects and see how it goes down the line. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that every choice you make, there's going to be a pro and a con to it.
Sure.
But I'll follow it with you guys, and you can, you know, let me know. And God knows we can have another one of these next year and help promote whatever you're going to do. Because whatever decision you're going to make, whether it's small, self, or a bigger publisher, you're going to need promotion anyway. It's just, that's a given.
Yeah. Okay. Well, something to think about. So, you know, hopefully it goes well and we make the right decisions and we can move forward. So.
Well, if you plan to do others in the future, the truth is that you can make all the wrong decisions on the first book and learn a great deal and then do it right on the second one. A lot of people do that as well.
Sure.
It's not like the end of the world if it doesn't work out the first time. You have another chance. This is America.
Right, yeah.
Sure. I kind of don't like that method, so you know, I like to start out. I like to start out well.
No, so, I hear you. It's just it's the choices that you guys have to make in the next couple months are the ones that writers face all the time. They're not really sure which one works best for them or not, even if they analyze everything. And sometimes it's a dice throw.
Or a dart, because dart, you know, that brings us to one of the chapters is about a dart throw. So, you know, we might incorporate that into our decision. It's as likely as not.
Yeah. So if you want to, I'll tell you a little bit about that story.
Yeah.
So, I had just separated with my second wife and, was living in Ithaca, working at Cornell, and it was the first time I was going to take a vacation by myself in like 25 years because I was married, and you know, the time between I was, you know, my first marriage and my second marriage, I was with my son who was very young, so I didn't really take vacations. So so I'm trying to think of where to go, and you know, it was the middle of February. I'm in Ithaca, where it snows all the time.
Yeah.
And I wanted someplace warm, so I'm thinking Caribbean, maybe like South America, something like that. And so this went on for a couple of weeks, and I couldn't decide. And finally, I decided one night when I came home from work that I was going to get my darts out, put a map up, and throw a dart, and wherever it landed, I was going to go. Now, there may or may not have been alcohol involved in that decision, but, you know, there it is. So I put my map up, got my darts out, and aimed low and to the left. I threw the dart. It went high and to the right, and it hit the northern part of the Black Sea. So the closest city was Odessa in Ukraine. 3 weeks later, I was on a plane and went there.
Holy moly.
Didn't know anyone there, didn't speak Russian, didn't know what I was going to do when I got there. And oh yeah, the year before there was a war in the eastern part of the country with the Russians. So it was pretty scary. And
same weather though, huh?
It was similar, yeah. it was a little bit, I went in around, St. Patrick's Day. So it was a little bit warmer. It did snow one night when I was there, but, you know, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, you might want to dart the Caribbean next time. Cause holy moly.
Yeah, well, that's where I was aiming, but you know, I guess I suck at darts. So, I can give you a little tip here. If you go to a country like that that's at war with their neighbors and you walk up to the metal detector and it goes off, don't reach into your pocket really quickly for the cell phone that you forgot to take out and pull it out, because they'll wrestle you to the ground and, you know, it'll be a little tense for a few minutes. Yeah. So that actually did happen. And you know, after a few minutes, we all laughed and I went on with my trip.
But, so you can see why everyone will need to read this book, because there's a lot of useful tips and lessons learned.
Yeah. Lessons learned for sure.
Tip number one, how not to get killed by the Russians.
And that's very timely at this point.
Yeah,
so,
it definitely is.
It was fun, though. I had a good time, and, you know, it was a really interesting trip. I would probably, if I had to do it again, I probably would. You know, if I ended up throwing a dart and hitting, like, North Korea, maybe I'd throw it again.
Yeah. But, please do.
But Ukraine was nice, and Odessa was... People are very friendly and had some good stories there.
Well, I'm happy with the warm weather. In fact, today was 98 degrees, and I was like, great.
Yeah, it was almost 90 here, I think. So.
98.
Wow.
Yep.
Where are you?
I live in Georgia, so I'm on the border. Oh, okay. I'm on the border of Florida, about like 20 minutes away. So it's super hot here.
Yeah.
I got all my landscaping done in like about 5 o'clock in the morning, which at that time was about 80, but I can actually live with that and get it all the way. So this way, when it got really hot, I'm like, good, I don't have to go out there anymore. Do any more of that nonsense. So definitely excited. No more cold weather for me. I've done plenty of it. I've been all over the world, including Denmark and Norway and Germany. One time when we landed in Alaska, because I was in the Air Force, and the guy says, listen, we're in the 6-month dark cycle, okay? So I'm like, what the hell does that mean? He goes, well, it'll be nighttime every damn day for the next 6 months. Oh, yeah, and by the way, in the area that you're going to be billeted in, and that's the military word for, you know, like a hotel, the polar bears walk around a lot. So I'm like, let me get this straight here. I'm going to a place where polar bears are walking around everywhere, and it's night all the time. I'm like, where am I at? Did I die and got judged by God already? Because this is not great.
Yeah, really. That would be hell for me, too.
Yeah, because you're thinking about it, and you know in your mind that you're in Alaska, but everything in your body says, this is not America. Because you don't normally deal with night all the time and polar bears nowhere in America.
Yeah.
So, like, you got to be kidding me.
That's funny.
They don't be messing around over there.
Yeah, I try and, like, every project that I do, I try and move a little farther south, so we'll see, you know, where the next one might be, but nobody wants to build a particle accelerator in the Caribbean thus far, but, you know, I've tried to get people to commit to that project, but nobody seems to want to do it, so I'll have to stay in the States.
Yeah, they're probably worrying about hurricanes and nuclear reactors exploding and stuff like that.
Sure, you know.
Those little things.
Details.
Yeah, exactly. Radiation exposure, and then the horseshoe crabs are like 27 feet long.
Exactly.
That's not going to work for me. So that's a great one right there, and I'm assuming now you have like another one you want to share. Maybe something equally ironic and entertaining.
Well, we don't want to give too much away. I will just say, like, a lot of the stories will hopefully lead the reader to ask the question, you know, if things happen because they're predestined to be that way, or if everything that happens is just random, or, you know, if there's something in between. So I think a lot of the stories will make you question that. And it starts with our meeting each other. And, you know, the question that's always in my mind was the timing. You know, was it meant that we were to meet each other? Or was it just a random thing that happened and turned out to be lucky? So I think that will sort of guide a lot of the stories.
Well, lucky is, you know.
What are you saying? It's like unlucky to meet me? Is that what you're saying?
No, it might be unlucky to meet me.
That was a good recovery, Matt.
Yeah, because I don't think that's what he meant. Do you, Mark?
Well, the show believes in the Fifth Amendment, okay?
Well, this show sucks, so.
Stop.
I'm just kidding, of course, but, I'm just speaking from my own thoughts.
You bring up some good points that a lot of people probably think about from time to time in their own lives. Is something luck? Is something fated? Is something predestined? It depends on your own level of spirituality. It also might also depend what you believe in science. When Einstein and others believed that time travel was possible, how can you believe in fate then if it's possible that you might be able to change history through time travel? So all of these things are explored by lots of people, and they wonder, and I do too.
Right, and I think Matt and I are good examples of, he's the Einstein and I'm the dreamer. So I think we have, two unique perspectives, and as we put them together, I think it will be interesting for people, and no matter which side of it you believe, I think you'll find both our perspectives to be pretty interesting. So the fact that we are together working is great. Whether you feel it to be lucky or unlucky that it happened, the things we produced, I think we would both agree, have turned out well so far.
And nobody really knows, but we know from many of our own lives that certain things happen, and it almost seems like it needed to happen for the next step to go through. And sometimes if you have that happen enough in your life, it becomes harder to say it's luck and more to say that it feels like a plan, or it feels like someone opened the door and you were wise enough to jump, through it and make something happen because of it. Almost like a wheel of opportunity, and you just took it rather than ignore it. And I feel more of the times that's what happens to people, because I know it's plenty of people. They ignore things and they wonder why they don't have the life they should.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I've taken a lot of chances, and I've made the leap a lot of times. And I do want to say that meeting Kat has definitely been lucky. I didn't mean to allude that it was unlucky. I was just thinking maybe from her perspective, it was unlucky to meet me, but she doesn't feel that way. She's sitting here shaking her head. So
I would shake more than my head if I wasn't the nice person of this duo.
There you go. There's got to at least be one of them in there. So I hear you. That's why I don't get along with people well in creative projects, because it's just too difficult to. With the clashing and everything, so sometimes strong wills are not always the best thing.
Yeah, we've come to an agreement on how it works, and it just does. She's great to work with, and
I just agree. That's what we agreed early on.
Say that.
Yes, you would. You already said earlier that the changes you suggest, you get your way. So, Mark, the thing is, we just said early on that I would agree. And then if the agreement turned out to be a bad decision, then Matt would be his fault. So really it's win-win for me. I agree. We go on and do whatever. And if it's great, then all's great. If it's bad, it's his fault. So I'm pretty much no responsibility here. I just agree and, smile and go on.
The traditional woman's logic, quite scary. I'm married. So God, I hear that a lot.
Well, I'm sure you have a great marriage if you're following that, because she agrees and you make the decisions, and if they're wrong, you suffer the consequences. It's not her fault. She agreed with you.
I only think that we work well because I only take positions that I feel the strongest about, and everything else she could just make a decision on, and I'll go with it. It makes things a whole lot easier. It reduces the amount of fights we have, too, which is a great thing.
I will say we have not had any fights. And really, I would say overall, we have not had any, what you would call, disagreements. You know, other than just saying, I had him crying in the scene in the play, and he says, you know, that's not him. He would not be a character that was crying in that particular situation. So as beautiful as the scene was with the crying, you know, I removed that. And it's still in my mind, and it would be beautiful on stage. But, you know, I can live without that. And, you know, within the novel already, there have been a couple of scenes that I thought would heat up the book some. But for the reasons that he felt it was not the best choice, you know, I removed them. And the book doesn't suffer because of it. So, you know, we work well.
It's just, you know, in some instances, it's just really hard to imagine, like, people I know reading some of the things that we could put in the book, you know, as much as I want to be forthcoming and, you know, and present things as they happened and stuff. There's a line that I just have to draw. And cause some things are really personal, and, you know, I just don't want to put that out there. So that's, you know, that's one of the issues that I struggle with is what the line is that I'm comfortable with. So.
And that's fair enough. I don't think anything's wrong with that, because ultimately, when a person is the subject of something, you know, they got to have some decent feelings that it's speaking to who they are, or if anything, maybe there's some things that need to be, you know, private because they're not ready for that, or maybe it's just something they don't ever want to see. That you really can't be perfectly 100% honest in everything in a person's life. I mean, either the people take poetic license with what they write, or you just step in and say, this is not really me.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's one story in the book about my first wife who, she had some addiction issues, and there was an argument that we had where she said something that could have had a, you know, significant effect on me, and to some degree it did. And I would, as we were writing it, and I was reading through the, you know, reading through the scene and or the story and thinking about it, I was like, you know, how much of this do I want to put out there? Because I know my son is going to read the book, you know, and it's about his mother. So, you know, that makes it difficult in some respects. You know, and then there's a lot of things that happened that probably, like, my family doesn't know about and things like that. So I'm just a little leery of how much of that I want to share.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. And there's no reason why you or Kathy, as you navigate, because that's really what you're doing, through all of that you still can't come out with a lot of good material that still keeps you happy, still keeps the audience engaged and interested. You're still telling the truth, but I don't know, is there some rule out there you're supposed to tell everybody 100% of everything? Because I don't, and I'm a writer for 35 years, so why should you? I mean, you don't have to. You still have to keep certain things to yourself, if not for integrity's sake, just for your own dignity.
Yeah, that's true. So,
and I do think writing together this time is quite a bit different than when we wrote the play together. because basically the play was all new information to me. This is sort of, you know, we're probably almost 9 months into since we first met. So, you know, now I have a lot more information. And I guess with a story, sometimes it's hard to separate, like, what I was told, you know, in interviewing for the play versus what I might be told now as a, you know, as a friend. So sometimes, you know, I can know something, but it wasn't meant for me to know it to necessarily write it in the book. So I think that's where it's really good that we're both very involved in the writing.
And willing to compromise.
And willing to compromise, you know, when something like that does slip into the story. Because it's never intentional, of course. You know, no one is trying to hurt anyone by writing something.
Oh, she's threatened to kill me off a few
times. I have threatened to kill him, yes, in the play. But, you know, that's just like, I'm just trying to, like, make him on the same level with my other characters. Because, you know, every other play that I'd written, the character died and Matt survived. So that is a testimony to my, you know, my positive feelings for him.
And my perseverance.
Well, he wants to take some credit for that, but, you know, really, that's all me. I could have killed him off. There were like a million ways. And we joked about them often. But, you know, I think when some occasion happens that it does cross the line, because I'm very sensitive to his son reading the book. I was when we wrote the play. You know, I'm always trying to keep that in mind. Like, I don't want the book isn't meant or the play wasn't meant to demonize anyone. It simply is a snapshot of a scene that happened in that moment. And, you know, just like everybody, we have moments that if we were spotlighted, we would look great, and other moments could make us look terrible.
Oh, yeah.
So we were not even drawing any conclusions about the person. It's just, this is something that happened, and this is Matt's lesson that he learned from it and his thoughts about that moment in time. So, you know, just say that just helps keep it in perspective. And we have a pretty good balance, I think, of just being cooperative when there's something that that does cross the line of where Matt feels comfortable. And he hasn't asked me to write anything so far that I felt uncomfortable with. So I really haven't had to compromise in that way.
Wow. That's excellent. And I definitely agree with all you guys, what you're doing and what you have to say. I know from my own standpoint, oftentimes there's things I wanted to write that I didn't even physically write. Like I wanted to write some of the last days of my father, and there was nothing that I thought that while he was still alive he would disapprove, because it wasn't anything inaccurate or anything embarrassing. I just couldn't do it until he died, and then it took years afterwards before I can even really write down something. But while he was still alive, I don't know, it just seemed disrespectful. Even though there was nothing in it that was unusual, it still seemed that way. It's probably just all in my head, but, you know, that's where it counts, because oftentimes that's where a lot of writing is. It's in your head, and if you don't get it straightened out, it's not ready then, you know?
I think one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to write this is because there's a lot of things that may or may not have affected me, and, you know, I've never, like, maybe I've never resolved some things. So, you know, in that way, it's helpful for me to, like, get it out, get it on paper, and, you know, I can put it down and move on. And there's a few instances that we may not have written about yet, but I know they're coming that will be like that. So I'm looking forward to that part of it as well.
Well, it makes sense too, especially if some of those are instances where you could learn from the experience so that maybe you don't repeat it if it's something, you know, that's negative. And why not get something out of it of human value too, and not just literary?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to, like, think about, you know, the situations as we write them and what I actually learned from them. And that's what goes in my part, is what I learned from what happened and my feelings about different things. And, you know, I think that'll be a sort of a unique aspect of the book because I haven't seen it done. But that's not to say that it hasn't. But, you know, for me, it'll be interesting to see what I come up with on some of these things because, you know, I always in the back of my mind, I think about, you know, like a certain situation and I think about like, okay, this is how it affected me. And this is, you know, I may have been pissed off about it at the time or, you know, whatever. But I've definitely learned a lot from different things and, you know, hopefully people will find that interesting and maybe see some of that in their own life and be able to implement some, you know, some similar strategy to what I've done in different situations. So that's, yeah, that's kind of the point of the book. So.
Yeah, it'll be in its own right a type of selling point, too.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I guess time will tell.
Well, I definitely love the whole idea, and I understand that regardless of what people say, TV and Hollywood or in the newspapers, there is a limit to candor because you only can get so much from it, really. You know, before it just becomes, you know, painful or hurtful. And I always tell people that, you know, they should only put up much on paper as they're willing to live with. You know, that's really the basic rule to protect a person, because you can't put everything out there. Not only is it not only going to be well received, but you don't even know what you have to live with. And that's one of the problems with things on paper, is it don't go away. It'll be out there for years. So you have to make sure that whatever you're doing is something that you can live with for maybe the rest of your life.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I you know, my feeling is I can put most things out there, but there's a few things that I just, you know, don't want to go there. We do have enough material probably for two books, and at this point there may be more stories that I'll remember as time goes on, but you know, we're trying to make this first one, we're just kind of learning as we go, like what's acceptable, what's not for me, and so it's a learning process for me because I'm not a writer. But I'm going to, you know, do my best to put out a good product and, you know, and be happy with the results. So
I hear that. Well, you definitely have a great partner over there, somebody that knows what she's doing and definitely has the integrity to know where to go and where not to go. Because that's half of the game right there, is to know those things. Otherwise, you know, it just becomes a mess that won't really reach anybody. But I have faith that you guys are going to figure that out.
Yeah, I think we'll do well. The process is a little bit different for the play, you know, from writing the play. You know, there seems to be a little more back and forth about things, and it's working out well. You know, we're a few chapters in, and I'm pretty happy with the results so far. So,
well, that's definitely excellent to hear.
Because, you know, this is it's a challenge to write this way for me. I'm used to plays, and so dialogue has been my main focus, and now having to, mm-hmm. you know, adapt to sentences and paragraphs and, you know, description. Yeah, those things.
Green.
Yeah, those things that I used to hate. you know, it's so I'm finding that I'm having to do a lot more rewrites than I did with the play.
Yeah.
But I found it interesting. Like, I thought at first, you know, I'm not going to like this because I keep having to, you know, I knew, like, when I wrote it, it's not what I want. And so I'd rewrite it. And I thought, I'm not going to like something I'm going to have to keep doing over and over. But as I see it getting better and I start getting a feel for the way this genre is going to work, you know, then the third chapter, I feel like we'll take fewer rewrites. I feel like I'm on a better path. So I think as we go along, it's going to get faster and easier because it's all new to me. It's writing, but just because you write doesn't mean that adapt it, you know, like writing, I used to write songs for a really long time. That's what I did. And, you know, so I had the song period and then the play period. And, you know, that doesn't mean that I can all of a sudden just write anything because that I can write one form. Doesn't mean I can't. It just means it's going to take some time and more practice. But it's a challenge. And so I think that's one of the reasons that I really was excited that we went this route, because another, you know, extending the play would have been fun, but it would have been more of the same of the typewriting I'm doing. Plus, I'm already, you know, I'm still writing plays, so I have those projects going on. But this is a chance to do something different. And so I like that challenge. And I like the information that I learned from Matt, you know, who was a stranger and, you know, now really doesn't feel like one.
Well, you definitely have the right attitude and you're going in the right direction, because one of the things that you already discovered that it takes me, I don't know, 100 hours of telling people and shows to lecture them is most prose and most fiction writing is rewriting, and people look at the rewriting as a monotonous slate of extra work, not understanding, which you're already understanding, that there should be a lot of joy in it, because you're going to find right away with rewriting is that you're actually improving what you did before. I always feel the work is the initial writing. Everything else on the rewriting is a lot more fun, because it's easier to rewrite and improve on things, and you feel a whole lot more satisfied. I oftentimes right. feel better rewriting than I felt the initial writing.
I can agree with that. I found that to be true in my early stages here of this. But I'm excited. And I think people will really be pleased with the product, because another thing we do have in common, even though we're quite different, as we've mentioned in some ways, is that we both have pretty high standards, and we're not just going to release something that, you know, looks like a child could have put it together. You know, we expect a lot from ourselves and from each other, and so the product's going to be of a high standard and a high quality.
Definitely where you want to go with all of that, especially when you're tackling somebody's real life. I mean, to do anything else, it just becomes a travesty rather than something that we can all celebrate and learn from.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, I mean, I want to put out a good product, and, you know, I just don't want it to not be fun. You know, when it becomes not fun, then, you know, you don't want to give up if you're 9/10 of the way there. But I generally try and enjoy everything that I do. And, you know, I want this project to be enjoyable for both of us and for people to get something out of it. And, you know, so far, so good. Knock on wood.
I don't know, Mark. He's like sounding like he's, you know, again, already thinking we're gonna like quit having fun, and you know, God. Like after 9 chapters or whatever. So if we get to 9 chapters, I don't care what we have to do. We are finishing this book. So, you know, fun or not.
Well, it's a new experience, so you're gonna have some trepidation. That should be expected. I don't like people that are so positively certain about something that they wind up falling off the cliff because they were so happy about everything they didn't look around. So it's probably healthy to have a little fear.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have a little bit of that. As you know, it is all new to me. I mean, I've never written a book before, never written anything before, and that goes for school papers and. So it's been an interesting process so far, and, you know, with the play and some of the stuff that I added for that, and now with the book, and I'm finding that I do have I can do pretty well. So
you really can. That is true. And with the play, the contributions that he made were very strong, and I feel like, you know, minus he never would have thought of the idea of doing it without meeting me, you know, he could have written the play himself. I was not a necessary part of the process, except for he never would have thought of doing it.
Yeah, I have to disagree there, because I just could not have done it without her. You know, the idea and the structure of it and things like that, I just, you know, that wouldn't have even crossed my mind.
So, you know, I'll just agree with him on that, and we'll move on. But I would like to say this, Mark, because I think this is very important since we last talked to you. And so Lynn Camp High School, a small high school in southeastern Kentucky, they premiered the play. And two things are interesting about that experience for me. One is, you know, we had Arthur Canada is his name, and he works through a government grant with Berea College, and they work with different high schools in, you know, certain areas. And so he introduced us to Lynn Camp High School and Corey Taylor, who is a teacher there, and she actually was one of my drama students several years ago. She's a history teacher at Lynn Camp. So they don't have a drama program, but she has some really talented, exceptional kids who are interested in drama. So Arthur arranged for Matt and I to go and speak with them and do this pitch, you know, to see if they wanted to perform Unstoppable. And so we had gotten feedback from older readers, and, you know, that could be like older meaning, you know, mid-20s and up. But we didn't know how high school students would react to it. So we went there on our appointment day, and, you know, there sat the teenagers, and they were very attentive, and Matt and I started with the pitch of, you know, how we met and what the story was about a little bit, and then they called from the office it was time for a couple of the students to go on a field trip, and they didn't want to leave and go on the field trip. They didn't want to leave, like, listening to our story, our pitch. So I knew then it was a really good sign that this was going to be something that resonated with high school students. And then, you know, the school went on to do a combined cast of teachers and students. So the performance of the play was wonderful because it combined those, you know, elements working together, which you hardly ever get to see in high school theater, much less in a school that does not have a drama program. But what they have is like exceptional drive and talent and enthusiasm, because these are kids staying after school, you know, giving up their own personal time to practice. They're not getting a grade. They're not getting any money. They're not getting any benefit except the love of theater and the love of this message. So I was so happy, and I know Matt was as well, that this was a school that performed the play, premiered the play. But the second thing that happened is the night of their performance, you know, there were two other high schools performing different plays. And so when the program was over, one of the students from the first play, who was from Clay County High School, he came up to me, and I thought that he was going to, you know, talk about the play that he was in with me. But instead, he was complimenting me. And actually, you know, he had tears in his eyes, which is very unusual for, you know, a male high school student in this public setting with a complete stranger. And he was talking about the impact of Unstoppable on him. So here's someone from another school, another cast, who's done a very outstanding job of it, you know, of another play that's very, very dramatic and has a strong message. But yet he is touched by Lynn Camp's performance of Unstoppable. So immediately I knew I had to introduce him to Matt. And Matt, if you want to say anything, because I just know this was a moment I'll never forget.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. We talked a bit about his story and some of the things that he went through. And apparently he had some scholarships that were, some of the funding fell through, for him to go to college. And, he, you know, his plan was to just get a job somewhere and, you know, make that his, you know, that was his plan for the next phase of his life after graduating high school. And, so after hearing the play, it just inspired him to do whatever he had to do in order to go to college and, you know, be successful and, you know, get away from his less than ideal situation at, you know, at home and things like that. So, you know, it was pretty cool to see that and to hear that. You know, I wished him well and told him if he needed anything to let me know, and I would do what I could to help him. But it was pretty humbling to hear that story. And also, you know, it's so strange to see, like, events from your life performed on a stage and you know, everybody responding to it and stuff. But it is pretty cool.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Kathy and Matt. And I agree with you. It is. It makes... I don't know how much experience Kathy has on other genres of writing, but I've done 6 different ones as we're speaking right now. I'm actually finishing up on a screenplay, and I can tell you that playwriting is uniquely different. The experience is so dramatically different, and because it has so much of the human element right in front of your eyes, and the real immediate impact of an audience. So you just don't get that with other writing, including even screenplays. So it is a very special, and when it works the way you guys have made it work, it makes it all not only worthwhile, but almost it gives it a almost like a spiritual dimension.
Well, Lynn Camp High School, I feel like, was another of those meant-to-bes that I believe in. I definitely think they were meant to be the high school to premiere the play. It resonated with them, and it speaks well for them, their dedication to the message. And I couldn't have asked for a better group to premiere the play. It was really memorable. I'll never forget seeing that performance. No matter how many more times we may see it in the future, that one will always be special.
Yeah, it definitely was for me as well.
That's just something else, but it does speak to the quality of the writing, and really the depth of your story. That it has, I guess, a certain universal appeal that I think many people would say, hey, you know. And I think on just on a practical level, if you would do this at a college, you know, maybe versus high school or something like that, they might have a different experience with it. And then if you did it with probably 30 or 40 years old, they'd probably be more nostalgia reflecting upon decisions they did, good and bad. You know, where you did it right there, those people are still having to make up decisions that could alter their lives for years to come.
Yeah, they, everybody was very into the whole process. And, I think they all learned something individually from it. At least that's the way it seemed to me. It was just really a good experience all around for us as well as them, I think. Everybody did a phenomenal job. So, I mean, it's just so baffling to me at times how this all came together and how, just how it's all gone. I'm pretty happy with everything so far, and I'm looking forward to what's to come. Hopefully we'll get another performance of the play soon.
I expect that, and I'm definitely rooting for that, and I wouldn't be surprised about that. It deserves that and more. If you've been to the theater at all, Matt, on plays that have nothing to do with what you guys are doing, you'll see that oftentimes there's a lot of drama out there that's not social. It doesn't have the social impact. It could be a comedy or, this could be about some other subject, but it doesn't always reach across the aisle like what you guys are doing. The social aspect of drama is still, I think, few and far between. So, when it's done right, like what you guys have done, it could literally touch or even change somebody's life.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're hoping for. And Kat certainly, she certainly did a good job writing the dialogue and getting the story to where I was comfortable with it. And, that was hard to, it was a hard thing to do. There was just so many aspects of it that she did well, and I think the play definitely shows her work and dedication to the project.
And, am I dying or something? Do you all know something? I feel like I'm at my funeral or something.
We're just being solemn and respectful of something that's not an easy thing to do. Social writing is difficult. If it's not done well, it winds up becoming propaganda or lecturing or worse. And then you've just failed at the art. So imagine when you do something like you guys have done that's been successful and doing what it should be doing. Well, it's a rare treat, and it needs to be exposed further. So I'm going to be excited to hear more about more of appearances and performances out there with this. And, of course, I'm definitely want to hear what you guys are doing this next project. I'm anticipating we're going to have another interview probably early next year and see where you're going to go from there. So it's an exciting to be a part of the journey that you're putting us all through in a good way.
Well, we appreciate you having us and letting us tell the story and, being a part of it. You never forget your first, Mark.
Yeah, I never forgot my first girlfriend and how horrible that went. So I'm 54 right now, and I still remember her name and everything. I'm like, God, can you just remove this from my memory? It would be nice. But you're right, you don't. So I understand.
Oh my gosh,
that's the truth. I'm like, God, talking about 100,000 mistakes all done wrong in about 24 hours.
Well, I mean, I was just talking like, you never forget your first podcast kind of thing.
Okay.
And, we appreciate you, having us and letting us do all this. And so hopefully we'll be able to come back again soon.
You're definitely welcome. And I know that people are going to be interested in what you're doing. because it has meaning and it has impact and it has value. And right now you're doing that in an age and a part of our society right now where all people want to do is become a victim and cry all the time and never see anything to go forward with. So they might need what you're doing more than ever before. So I'm certainly happy to promote that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the message right there is, keep moving forward and, hopefully people will get that from the book and from the play.
I'm expecting so, and I'm happy to be a big part of this. Folks, we want to wrap that up. I want to thank you very much for Unstoppable by Design with Kathy Gauguin and Matt Riffenberg. They produced the play that's already been performed and on the first interview. Now they're thinking about doing a novelization of some of the characters and many of the other stories and things that Matt had going on in his life. And that, of course, will be something that is going to be enlightening and enriching for all of us. And we're going to keep a track of all of this, and I'm sure we're going to have them on again because this is a continual saga. And I don't mean like, Dallas. I mean something more positive than that.
Who shot Matt? Yeah, nothing like that.
Unless someone throws a dart in his head. Otherwise, we're gonna stay positive here.
It might be me.
That's possible. Like all relationships, you're gonna have your tense moments. But I'm excited on what you guys are doing because it's impacting people's lives. It already has in many instances, and of course, to have two people doing something in a common goal. In a world right now where it's hard to get anybody to agree on anything, is a minor miracle in itself. So God bless you both for all that you're doing and all that you're going to continue to do.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you letting us be here.
You got it. Thank you as well, Kathy, and we'll definitely stay in touch. Tonight I released the first of a four-part series, Writing is Fire, and the first one is on playwriting. So I released that out tonight. So when you get a chance one of these days, I know you said you were kind of catching up, so eventually you'll like that. In fact, you'll hear some funny stuff that you were just talking about on the transition from fiction to go to drama and the big differences and everything. So you're going to get a kick out of that.
Great.
It'll be fun. All right, you guys, you have a great evening, and thank you very much.
You too, Mark. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.